At Carl's Jr., we're pioneers of the great American burger. We're about quality, value, and taking a stand for your hard-earned dollar. That's why we made the $2.49 jalapeno double cheeseburger. It's the best burger for the price you ever had, with two charbroiled beef patties, jalapenos, and pepper jack cheese. Because if you don't stand for something, that means you're sitting. And that's just lazy. The $2.49 jalapeno double cheeseburger, the best $2.49 burger you ever had. Only at Carl's Jr. Price and participation may vary. Tax not included for a limited time only.
Blog Talk Radio. And welcome to Embrace Your Ambition. This is episode 3 with Beverly Bramwell. Welcome to another episode of Embrace Your Ambition. And I'd like to talk today about how powerful you are, yet you just don't realize it. Before we start, let me tell you who I am. I'm Beverly Bramwell, and I'm a career transition coach. And what that means in essence is I work with people who are stuck in their careers. And that impact of being stuck means that they can't get on with their careers, and of course they can't get on with their lives. And I help them with their confidence, and I help them to see something that is different, that perhaps has been staring them in the face, so that they can become unstuck and get started. So in my work, talking to people about who they are and what they do, I'm always fascinated by how people talk down their achievements and their successes. And I know that sometimes it's so easy just to downplay, I didn't do anything. And it's from that place that we feel we don't have any power. Before I kick off the show, I'd like to read to you a quote from Marianne Williamson. Many of you will have heard this, so I make no apologies, but I think it's important to set the tone for where I think we're coming from today. The quote is from Return to Love, A Course in Miracles. Our deepest fear is not that we are inadequate. Our deepest fear is that we are powerful beyond measure. It is our light, not our darkness, that most frightens us. We ask ourselves, who am I to be brilliant, gorgeous, talented, and fabulous? Actually, who are you not to be? You are a child of God. Your playing small does not serve the world. There is nothing enlightened about shrinking so that others won't feel insecure around you. We're all meant to shine as children do. We're born to make manifest the glory of God that is within us. It is in all of us. It's in everyone. And as we let our own light shine, we unconsciously give other people permission to do the same, so that we are liberated from our own fear. Our presence makes it easy for others to do the same. So I just wanted to set the tone there for us today, that we are powerful beyond measure. And as Marion says, our playing small does not serve anyone. And certainly to play small because we're afraid of what others might feel or how others might be is a great shame. So if I told you that you were powerful beyond measure, would you believe me? But what if you could change your thoughts and see yourself as others see you? So many of you do not realize when I say this, but when you tell me what you do, I am in awe. And I know there are other people who are in awe of what you do and of how you do it. And so much that you do, it's almost second nature, like breathing. or walking. You do it and you don't even realize you're doing it. But what you're doing is having an impact on others, having an impact at work, having an impact much greater than you can realize. And yet, you just don't see it. And so then when you tell me that you're stuck and you can't move forward, on the one hand, I get it, because you can't see this. And you have become caught up in the thoughts of, yeah, if I could just get this right, I'd be okay. And it's not that you're not, maybe it's not your confidence, but you don't feel that you are enough of whatever it needs to be to move forward. And as I said, my work with people, mainly women, but not exclusively, means that this has an impact on other areas of their life. Because if you're not playing full out at work, you probably aren't playing full out at home as well, because you're thinking about it, you're dwelling on it. And if you're not playing full out at home, in your relationship with your spouse, and if you've got children with them too, then something isn't quite right. And by full out, I'm not meaning stress and I've got to get it all right and everything else. I'm just saying showing up every day in the way that makes a difference. So that's what I mean by playing full out. And this showing up, a lot of people are only showing up in 60% at work, and they're probably only showing up at 50% at home, and even less so with their children and with their friends. I have a phrase, I call it phoning it in. And you may have used it in other places, but I call it, you're phoning in your relationship, you're phoning in your job. You're not connected to it on any level other than I need to do it. And if you're phoning it in, if you're just not showing up in the way that you know would be great, how does that feel? What does that show up for you? What does that look like? What does that feel like? My experience of that has been deep, deep frustration, because I can't see very far. I'm dissatisfied, I can't work it out, and I feel that if I could just get unstuck, it would be great. And so when somebody says to me, but you don't realize, Beverly, just what you're doing, I'm not being sort of false modest by saying, what, me? I just don't get it. So if I'm not getting it on some level, I can see when other people tell me that they don't get it. When somebody tells me they've closed a deal for a bank that they work for, which is going to have far-reaching impact across the financial industry, and says that in the same way, in the same breath, as in though that, yeah, I'm thinking about another job, and they're sort of talking about this other job, or somehow they're going to, I don't know, go and do something which is quite less. And yet they've told about this thing that they have done, and they can't quite connect with the impact of what they are doing. So that's the place that we're working from today. It's something, if you could almost like have an out-of-body experience and step right outside of yourself and see yourself as others see you, that would be step one for you to see who you really are. Because lots of you don't know who you really are. You've put on this mask and you wear it through the job, you wear it all day, and so that's what you believe is who you are. Sometimes the mask slips off, because that's what masks do, and the other stuff starts coming out. Sometimes it's good stuff, sometimes it's not. But in actual fact, until you start owning who you are, owning your fabulousness, owning the fact you are talented, owning the fact that you are powerful beyond measure and that you make an impact in this world, then the mask is there and it sort of slips off and you don't quite realize. And as I said, then you're not showing up and you're not playing full out. And I've always maintained, and I haven't said it yet, but I'm going to say it now, a life half lived is not living at all. You don't want to realize 10 years, 20 years down the line, if only I had done that, if only I had really gone for it, I could have. And it's not about if only I had gone for it, I could have really been a great person. I'm just talking about the fact that if I had played full out and realized who I was, I might have done a different job. I might have applied for a different job. I might have been in a different sort of place. I might have had a different sort of relationship. I might not have been with the partner that I was with, but I settled. And settling, I think, is a really tough thing. Settling, by that I mean, yeah, this will do. I'm in this job. I don't really like it. It doesn't really serve me. I've outgrown it, but it will do. Change jobs. If I start showing up as a person who wants to be VP or wants to be the chief exec, what's that going to mean to my spouse, to my friends, to my mother, to my whomever it is important enough that you care what they think, and what they think is more important than what you do. So I won't go for the VP job. I won't go and become CEO. I won't even apply for those jobs. I'm in a relationship. I'm not happy. But I won't talk to my spouse about it. I won't perhaps suggest that we seek some sort of couples counselling. Perhaps we've gone past that stage and maybe I should be thinking about moving on. But you know what? It's really tough being on your own. It's really tough if you've got kids and you're being on your own, a single parent. So I'll settle for this relationship. I'll settle for the fact that this man does, or this woman does not love me, or does not love me and respect me the way that I want them to love me back. They do not treat me the way that I want to be treated. But it's okay, because they come home to me at night, so I'll settle for that. And that's what I mean about playing small, that we somehow don't believe that we deserve any more than that. The next thing to think about in this playing small and not realizing is that we can, because it's quite a fast-paced life, just get caught up in, I'll get this done, and I move on to the next thing, and the next thing, and the next thing. And you probably can't hear me clicking my fingers, but it's a bit like that. And at no point do we stop, pause, and think, well, that wasn't bad. I did quite well there. The team did pretty good there, too. This is not, I'm having a great relationship. Yeah, my partner, yeah, I get that. No, we've moved on to the next thing. So we haven't had a chance to look at it. I know they've got this thing about smelling the coffee or smelling the flowers. To pause, to reflect, to review. We've moved on. So therefore, of course, we don't notice that we've done a good job. Because we've moved on to the next thing already. So we're either in the camp of, we're not moving on because we're so stuck, or we keep on moving on because we think as long as we keep on moving, you can't hit a moving target. So we'll just keep going. We'll just keep going. And I find in that we'll just keep going, there's something about the perfection thing for some of us. I have seen this at close quarters. This need for perfection in ourselves and this need for perfection in everybody else. And so they'll say, well, I'm not playing small, I'm going for broke. But yet, things can only be right if they're perfect. And they may not use those words, and you may not use the words as perfect, but you know what you do and how you are. So if it's 98%, you'll find fault for the 2%. And if it's not just so, I can't do this because it needs to be this way. And if it's not this way, then it's rubbish. And if it's rubbish, then, you know, what's the point of bothering? So we don't trust ourselves because things aren't perfect. So to compensate, we plan again. And we can't relax because we have to get it right. And it's back to this getting it right thing that I talked about at the very beginning of this conversation. The getting it right, because then we're sure we're okay. Then we're sure that we've got it. And I'm saying, you haven't got it at all. Because you're in that place of not trusting, deep frustration, a lot of tension, because you're trying to make sure I'm getting it right. Have I got it right? Yes, I'm getting it right. I'm getting it right. I'm getting it right. And so therefore, there is no room to pause and reflect. And if we did pause and reflect, we'd only beat ourselves up because we got it wrong, because we weren't perfect. And so therefore, this idea of being powerful, beyond all measure, believe it, won't believe it. And yet, the people I know who are doing this, They are bright, they are capable, they are so many things, but they can't see it. And if they've had a great achievement, as I said, they don't pause, they don't reflect, they move on to the next thing. And the whole time they're worrying about getting it right. And I will confess that I too have my moments of wanting to get it right. When I first started out, before I became the coach that I am now and the entrepreneur that I am now, I was in paid employment. And then one day I lost that job. And I didn't lose it as such, I was made redundant, but that's the phrase I'm using. I lost that job. And I lay at home on my sofa for about 6 months, feeling angry, what should I do? Feeling angry, what should I do? And we veered between the two things. And when I eventually got into business and I had a coach and I worked on what I wanted to do when I got started, when things were going well, it was fine. But when they weren't going well, I was worried about the fact that was I getting it right? And if anybody who listens to this show runs a business, you will have been there too, because there's marketing to do, there's promotion to do, there's the financial side of it. And especially on the marketing side, we all want this flow of clients. We all want a flow of customers. So you want to get it right. So I was very caught up in the getting it right, whatever right looked like. Put my version of right, probably anybody else's version of right. But I was in that place of getting it right. So I totally get this idea of wanting to ensure that if I get it right, then all will be well with the world, and therefore then on I go. And I think it's the same in careers, that there is feeling of, okay, I'm in this job and I want to go for the next job, but I'm not sure about this, and I've got this other thing going on in my head, and somebody told me somewhere that you need to do this, and I read somewhere something else about what you should do next, and you shouldn't do this and you must do that. And guess what? I'm overwhelmed, because I'm overwhelmed with how am I going to get it right. So I'm stuck in that place of I just can't move forward. And yet, if I asked you, what do you want? Once the noise that's in your head settles down, often you can tell me quite clearly and easily, I want to do this. This is where I see myself. This is what it looks like. But there's an awful lot of noise, and we all have the noise. Sometimes people call it the inner voice, the inner chatter, but there is noise. Whatever it sounds and feels like to you, there is noise. And it's going on and on and on. And what you've got to do is accept that it's not going to go away. So if you're waiting for it to quieten down, I'm here to tell you, it never quietens down. However, what you can do is turn down the volume that you feel that you have over it. So therefore, I hear you, but that doesn't mean I'm going to get caught up in it. And separating out, which is the noise, which is your inner voice saying, well, you want to think about this, you want to think about that. And the other stuff that's going on where you're listening to your friend, your mum, the TV, reading an article in the Times, which says you've got to do this, you've got to do this, and you mustn't do this, and you have to do that. And you're taking all those things on board, and all of a sudden, hey, my gosh, you're overwhelmed and just stuck. And being stuck is the worst, because you just can't see how to move forward. You can look back, just about, but you can't see how you move forward. And so I said, this overwhelm thing is a terrible thing, because in some cases it can get so bad that it turns into a form of depression, and you really then are stuck and you really can't move forward without getting some further support and help. But before it gets to that stage, you've got choice upon choice upon choice upon choice. Shall I do this? And if I do this, what about that? And if I do this, what should I do? And it goes on and on. So until you talk to a friend, a colleague, a coach, your priest, your partner, in an honest way, says, this is where I am and this is what I'm thinking about doing. And you're not actually asking for their approval. You're just actually wanting to get this stuff out of your head, so that therefore you can start to think clearly. Some people are fortunate enough and they journal and they can journal it out. But sometimes, even as you're journaling, the hum and that inner noise is going strong. So I would suggest speak it out loud. this is what I'm thinking of doing. And not because, and not because I want you to ask me why. I don't want you to listen whilst I say, I'm thinking about doing this. I've got some ideas about that. And I'd like to do this too. And maybe if they're a good enough listener, they'll let you finish and they'll say, why? And why that? Or maybe they might just say, why not just pick one and see where you go with it? In that moment of silence, when someone says, just pick one, I don't care which one you do, darling, just pick one. There's a feeling of, it may not be clarity, but all of a sudden you can think, okay, I can see what I might do here. And as long as the hum doesn't start going back up again, and as long as you don't start getting caught up again in what others might think or do or say on the matter, it's fine. I know somebody who's a very successful entrepreneur, makes a lot of money, but she said, I don't really tell my mother what I do. Not that it's a secret, she knows I work and she knows I'm an entrepreneur, but I don't really get to give her too much detail. Because I don't really want to hear what she thinks on the matter, because she doesn't get it. And so therefore, she'll speak to me from a place of not getting it. And I don't need her to be telling me about, it's a dangerous thing, and you should put your money in a bank or under the bed or whatever it is, and oh my God, how can you be an entrepreneur? You should get a proper job. She said, I don't really need to hear all that. I can do that on my own. So I just say, yes, things are going well, Mother, and I'm here, and it's great. It's lovely to see you, Mummy, and it's fine. But I don't get caught. I don't give her the detail. So she says, how are things? And I said, they're great. And she, I look okay. I look like I'm eating, so Mother's happy, and that's enough. And so often, for lots of us, we feel we have to share. And it's not that it's oversharing, but sometimes it's a reassuring thing while we're sharing, and sometimes we want to please. And I'm not saying you mustn't please, but I am saying, if in sharing the volume of the chatter goes up, then don't share with that person. Some people are interested in what you do, but they're not really interested in what you're doing. They don't really want to know about the fact that you want to become VP or head of department or whatever is your aspiration is. And I'm not saying other jobs aren't important. It's just as the people I work with tend to be about heads of department, VPs and CEOs. But it matters. It's the same thing, whatever you are, what it is you're wanting to do next. Someone somewhere will have an opinion. As long as you've got somebody that you tell something to, they may or may not offer you an unsolicited opinion. Sometimes it's helpful and sometimes it's not. Only you can know that, but you just have to know that, yep, that's great, thank you very much. Thank you for sharing that with me, and I'll take no notice. And I say this with love, but you know, sometimes you have to do that. So that's what I'm saying about once you know who you are and what you're about, you can have those conversations or not. And you can start to think about, how am I going to move forward? Because I know that certain things are important to me, and I know that I want to move forward. And I know that I don't want to be working anymore at 60 or 70% of my potential. I want to be working a hell of a lot closer to 100. Again, I know that the word power can be confronting, but if you can get past that and just think, I can be pretty good at what I do. I am pretty good at what I do. I'm very good at what I do. And I'd like to move on in my career. Or there can be another conversation which says, I enjoy what I do, but I'm ready for a different challenge. And I'm pretty good at this, and I think I can take those skills into my new challenge. My new challenge might be leaving the corporate world and setting up a business and becoming a consultant or doing something completely different. But I know that those skills, that resilience, that inner confidence, that ability to get things done, the ability to plan and organize things will be great in me running my business. And I'll know how to do certain things, and things I don't know, I'll get some help with. But I am ready for that next challenge. And that's what I want you to think about. Are you ready for your next challenge? In case you've just come in halfway through, I'm just going to remind you. My name is Beverly Bramwell, and I'm a career transition coach. And if you want to find me, I have a group called Embrace Your Ambition, and you're really welcome to join my group, and we can continue the conversation there. And if any time you want to contact me, then of course come to my Facebook page, which is Beverly Bramwell. That's my business page, not my profile page. But nevertheless, you can message me via Facebook, and I said my name is Beverly Bramwell. But let's get back to the show. Now that you've understood about how being powerless has been holding you back, and we're starting to look at who you really are, and for you to own who you really are, how do you start stepping up to the challenge of living your best life? Does the phrase living your best life confront you? Do you find that shocking? Because often that's where the issue lies, that in even acknowledging that there is something more and that you want more and you deserve more, are entitled to have more, for some people can be quite shocking and make you feel powerless again. Because how dare I say I want more? And as Marion said, who are you not to be talented and fabulous? But yet, I meet so many people who are talented and fabulous, but yet won't do that. They won't let their light shine. Brilliant, gorgeous, talented. This is who are you not to be? And can you imagine if we were all brilliant, gorgeous, talented, and fabulous? What a different time we'd all be having. And if we owned that fact. So that's the first place to start, is to own the fact that you are brilliant, talented, gorgeous, and fabulous. And I'm going to keep on saying that. You find it irritating, I'm sorry, but that's who I am. So I want you to start owning that feeling, owning the fact of what I did this week. And look at what has happened for you this week at work, at home. What did I do really well? How did that thing turn out? Well, that wasn't bad. I did that. And to have that type of inner dialogue, to have that type of journal entry, to have that type of conversation where, you know, that thing I was struggling with? Well, we did it. And I'll bet that you found that once you'd got over the struggling bit and you actually did it, it didn't feel quite so scary. And it didn't feel quite so daunting. And in fact, you barely noticed you'd done it. And if I hadn't brought it up now, you wouldn't remember you had done it. And that's what I want you to remember. To keep on acknowledging those victories. No matter how small, no matter how great, to acknowledge that you did this. I did this. I was sitting in a building which overlooks London, a great view. And in the distance, you could see the various shaped buildings in London. And for those of you who aren't in London, I apologize. But there's a building called the Gherkin. It looks sort of egg-shaped on the horizon. And whenever I see that, it reminds me of my own challenge. About 18 months ago, it was now, I signed up to run up the Gherkin. You can run up the inside of it. And I think they do something similar in America with very sort of large buildings. For charity, for the NSPCC, as a children's charity. I knew the day, and I hadn't really thought it all the way through, because once I had thought it all the way through, I realized there were a lot of steps and a lot of floors, but it was a bit too late, 3 weeks to go, that's where we are. And I got in touch with people to do the training, and I said, well, I've only got 3 weeks, and they said, well, again, this is where we are. So I said, I did go to the gym, and I still do go to the gym. What sort of advice could you give me? And they said, do as much sort of running up things as you can do. If nothing else, walk up steps, but get used to that. And they gave me some tips from the day. So for 3 weeks, I trained. Every time I traveled on the underground, which you'd call the subway, I'd walk up and down the stairs. I wouldn't just ride the stairs. I would walk up them. And in London, we've got very deep underground stations, so sometimes it's a lot of walking. And so I did that. I went to the gym, and I did the treadmill. I did the... What else did I do? There's something else I did. Cross trainer. I did lots of lunges and squats for my, to make my legs stronger. But for 21 days, I worked out. And the day before the thing was to happen, I stopped. And there were two things that kept me going. I wanted to raise lots of money, which I did. And on the day, they said, if you get to the top, not if, when you get to the top, because there's no option but to get to the top, you will get a glass of champagne. And I wanted my glass of champagne. And the other thing I wanted to remind myself was, it said that you could, the lowest age of entrance was 8-year-olds. And I thought about this, and I thought, I will not be bested by an 8-year-old. I'm not saying I don't, they wouldn't be there, but I'm not going to be racing one up and down the stairs. So if they can do it, I'm a hell of a lot older than 8 years old, I can do it too. And the one thing, a bit of advice they did give me from the trainers was, resist the temptation when they say go to start running up the stairs. It's a bit like the hare and tortoise race. Start slowly, because it is a high building, and at some point you'll reach that point where you realize the pressure on your lungs is quite intense, and so you want to have something left. So therefore, don't set off running, more of a slow jog. But therefore, you're right. When you, I was right, because when I got to that point where the pressure on my lungs really hit, and I saw those who'd run off standing to one side wheezing, I was like, yeah, I got this. Because we were two-thirds up, and I still had enough energy and resource to do the last third. And I'll write in the group how tall the buildings are, but at some point in time, you see a sign as you're going up which says, you've now climbed the equivalent of Big Ben. And Big Ben is a very tall building, again with a clock, it's very famous. So you can, if you see that, I still went higher than that. And at some point, there's another sign that says, you've now done the equivalent of, I don't know, 7 double-decker buses stacked on top of each other. So my point is, the Gherkin is a very tall building in London. It's one of the tallest. So in that last third, I kept going. I got to the top. I got my glass of champagne. In fact, I had two. And I took some pictures of myself and selfies and otherwise. And I took a view of London from the top. I took a picture of the roof to prove that I had actually got to the top. And I was like, this is a picture of the roof. But every time I see that building, I'm reminded of that achievement. And often, I've forgotten about it, but it only came back to me because we were sitting out on a Friday evening, the sunny evening, looking out over London, and we were talking about the buildings, and I thought, ah, there's the Gherkin. I climbed that. And sometimes when I'm feeling less than and think I can't do something, I'm reminded of the 3 weeks training, and it took you something like 11 minutes to get to the top. Athletes do it in about 4 or 5, so I wasn't too upset to have only done it in 10 minutes. But 10 minutes is 10 minutes, and it felt great to do it. But my point is, I see that building and I'm reminded. And as I said, it can be my talisman sometimes to remind me that maybe whatever I'm thinking I can't do, I can. So that's my point about pausing sometimes to see and acknowledge what you've done and what's happened. And that's another of those steps. To accept this is who I am, and then to acknowledge that I want to go on and do more. And as I said at the very beginning of the show, ambition is not a bad thing. So if you do want to be senior VP or CEO, that's your thing. If you want to leave the company and do something else, that's also fine. But own it. Don't apologize. Own it. Okay, so you've owned it. You've accepted who you are. What else do I need to do? Take the first step. The first step, what does that look like? Is it research? Is it going on somebody's website? Is it downloading something from the internet? I don't know. It depends on the situation. But my point is, take that first step. It doesn't have to be a big thing. It might be a tiny thing. It might just be the fact that I went on the website and had a look and thought, okay, that's what it looks like. Or I traveled to the place and had a look and thought, this is where I think I want to buy my house. I don't know. But my point is, take one step, a small step. And guess what the next thing is? Take another step. That's right. Take another step. Because that's all we have to do, is put one foot in front of the other. See, when we're trying to guess everything and guess all the outcomes and work out what if we don't do this right and what if we get that wrong and if we get this right, that's where the overwhelm comes in. We've got too much thought, too much stuff going on in our heads, trying to do the risk analysis, trying to work out if this is the best move for me, and if I do that, what will happen, what will my mother think, what will my husband think, and then if I do that and he doesn't like it. And do you see? Just me saying this out loud, and I'm starting to feel a little bit sort of worried and caught up in it all. So I can imagine for you, it's just the same. So think about, what's my next step? And then what's my next step? What can I do this week? What can I do next week? And those of you who are inclined, not everybody is, might write something down or might tap something into an electronic device. Or write something on a big piece of paper and put it on their wall. Whatever it is that makes you feel better about it. But my point is, you can take little steps, you can have a little plan, but just keep it really simple. And when you start feeling overwhelmed, step back. What is it I'm trying to do? Am I trying to start overthinking it? And the other thing, of course, is that I talked about perfection. Think about, how good does it have to be? And I'm not saying do a bad job, but because some of us are caught up in the perfection thing, we can't do anything, because unless we get it absolutely right, nothing happens. And maybe if we can just get it right enough, we'll see how it goes. And for those who are saying, but what if I get it wrong? Well, guess what? If you get it wrong, you will handle it. Does that sound harsh? Possibly, but that's the truth. If you get it wrong, you will handle it. We are resilient souls. We can be. Most of us have been through quite a lot. Doesn't matter. It's not a contest who had a tougher time doing this or that or the other. But my point is, things do happen. And therefore, in the fact that things do happen, we can keep going. We can acknowledge that, okay, I thought I wanted to do this. Now that I've had a go, I really don't want to do this. Well, that's okay. That's not the path then. I've learned something there that this wasn't the option I thought it was. And I move on. There is no time to be beating ourselves up to put on the shirt and go, well, oh my goodness, if I had known this, I could beat myself up for the next 3 minutes, 3 hours, 3 days, 3 weeks, 3 months, 3 years. We discovered something that maybe this isn't the right thing for us. That's okay. That's good. At least I know that now. I'm not carrying a torch around thinking this is what I wanted to do. I'm not thinking, oh, what if I had? No, I did the research. I found out a bit and thought, oh, no, that's really not it. And now that I know that, okay, I can move on and try out some of the other options that were in my head. And that's my point. You keep on going. And even in the face of adversity, we keep on going. The other thing that we can do, ask for help. You don't have to do it on your own. In fact, I don't advise you to do it on your own. Where you get help from is your choice. If it's sharing it with your spouse, then that's the place to do. But don't share it so that you can burden them with it so they can become the worrier. Share it from the point of the place of, this is what I'm thinking of doing. And what I just need is for you to support me, to have my back. I'm going to do the work, but just if I come home and the day hasn't gone quite the way it's gone, you'll put your cool hand on my fevered brow. And you'll say, there, there, darling. And that's all I want you to do. And if it hasn't gone wrong, I say, what are you going to do next? You're not going to get in my face about it. You're just going to say, what are you going to do next? But it'll be that cool hand on my fevered brow. And at least I know that I've got your support. Even better. Some of us may turn to friends, and that's also fine. Pick your friends. Some people don't like progress because they have decided in their own life that they don't want it, can't handle it. And so therefore, you're sharing that you want progress may not sit well with them. And so therefore, their feedback may not be helpful. That's all I'm going to say. It may not be helpful. So if it's the friend, pick your friend. I have friends that I only tell certain things to, and other friends I can tell anything to, simply because they react differently to it. So the same with your friends. We're all on our journeys, and I'm aware of other people's journeys, and therefore my journey might not be their journey. Sometimes we hire coaches, and I make no apologies for that too. I've hired a coach for my time. I have one now because they are dispassionate. Depending on their style of coaching, I don't tell people what to do. It's not my thing. But I will ask you why you're doing certain things. I may challenge you. And I may challenge you if you're not doing anything at all. If you're talking about, I'm going to do this, I'm going to find out about this, and 3 weeks later we speak and you haven't done anything, you're stuck, then we need to get into the discussion about the stuckness so we can stop you being stuck and so you can move forward. So, yeah, I'm your friend, not. I'm your confidant, yes. I will challenge you. I was going to say something else, and I've just stopped myself from saying it. But I am your champion. But I said I was a challenge and champion and confidant and your chief supporter. I want the best for you. I want you to live your best life. And I said I will call you out on your stuff when you're being whatever it is you're being. And when you achieve stuff and you're not noticing, I'll bring you back and say, guess what? You did this. So therefore, you can see and acknowledge that and build on that. So those are the types of steps I want you to think about. And I said, when you have accomplished that step, pause. I joked about the glass of champagne at the top of the gherkin. Whether it's a glass of champagne or a hot chocolate from your local place or a dinner out with friends, whatever it is, or just a cup of tea and your feet on the table goes, yeah, and your feet on the table and you go, yep, I did that. Or you punch the air. But what I want is a punctuation mark in your life that says, I did that. And we all know, if you all know what grammar is, you know what a punctuation mark is, but I want there to be a pause sufficient for you to acknowledge, I did this. On to the next step, because in knowing that, that's what you build on and you keep on building. And that's what I'm saying. You take a step, you do that, you take the next step, you take the next step. You haven't got to multitask. And by the way, on the subject of multitasking, I think, just my think, when you're multitasking, you end up not doing anything well because you're not quite giving yourself to anything. So I think focus on one thing and then on the next thing. I'm not saying you can't do different things, just don't do different things all at the same time. For those of you who like to watch TV whilst doing stuff on the iPad or the iPhone, you're not really watching TV, you're not really doing the iPad and the iPhone thing. So either put the iPad and iPhone down and watch TV, or switch off the TV and do a thing that you're just doing on your iPhone or your iPad. But I know lots of people like to do that thing where they sort of watch TV sort of, with half an eye, it was a common phrase, and at the same time doing stuff on their electronic device. And I apologize for saying iPad and iPhone, but whatever device you're using, your tablet and your smartphone, but you're not really giving yourself. And then you're half listening to your partner or half listening to your child. Be present with whatever it is you're doing. Much better. Ignore this idea of multitasking. We've been fed a lie. It's not true. We're not great multitaskers. We're just people who do lots of things not very well. I put my hand up, been there, seen it, done it also. But my point is doing it terribly well. So don't multitask. Focus on one thing. Focus on that in that moment. If you're reading a story to a child, read the story to the child. If you're watching TV, watch TV. If you're writing a book, write the book. Whatever it is you're doing, focus on that one thing in that moment. And these are the types of steps I want you to think about to start to feel powerful, to lose those feelings of being powerless, to lose those feelings of being inadequate, of being stuck. Start to turn down the noise that's in your head. Start to unpick the stuff that is threatening to overwhelm you. Start to ignore some of the stuff that is threatening to overwhelm you. If it's all there, I'm a great believer, if you have those things called post-its or whatever to hand, write it on one of those and stick it somewhere you can see it. And write them all on post-its. You can see them all. Again, I find things getting out of my head and onto paper or onto an electronic device may help. But I find post-its are great because I can move them around, or it can follow me around, or I can pick one and think, I'll focus on that. Pick another one and focus on that when I finish doing this one. So get all that noise that's out of your head and down on paper. As I said, post-its are a great way of doing it. But as I said, we all have our way of being, and I like the post-it. It's simple in its concept, but it just means that I write it all down. I write all the various things on that, and then I pick it up and put it in my notebook, and off I go with it. And it's almost like it's out of my head, it's down a piece of paper. And sometimes in writing it down, I'm thinking, no, 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 no. Or yes, but it's going to need some tweaking. And maybe even that needs to fit into something else. But I'm just going to focus on that this week and have a look. So if you can allow yourself to take off the mask and be who you really are, to own your ambition, to own your desire to be more, to have more, then you can start to feel quite different. And that's my point. If you can start to feel more powerful, that is quite a different sort of life. And that's my point, because this feeling of being powerless is often born from what's going on in our heads. Unless you are actually physically restrained, then I get it. But often it's not about being physically restrained. The restraints are in our heads. We start to believe something about ourselves or about our situation, and we bind to that whole feeling. And before you know what, we have become stuck, because then we've got the thoughts going on. As I said, that noise, that chatter becomes louder and louder and louder, so we feel we can't move on. But if you can start to see what it is that you do and how you respond to things, then all of a sudden you've got a chance to reduce those feelings of being powerless. So reduce the feelings of being powerless, start to own who you are. And point here, there is nothing wrong with being confident. I know some people think they can't, and I can see there's that thing about people being arrogant, and sometimes I think, is that just my reaction to them being who they are? Am I jealous? Has it triggered something in me? And only you can answer that, and only I can answer that. But my point is, be confident. Whatever confidence looks like for you, do that. Do that. Start to own the fact that you want more, to have more, to do more. And that you're not apologetic for it. I'm confident in knowing I want to live my best life. When we get to the end of our lives, and we will all get to the end of our lives, and you're lying on the bed, and hopefully there is a time for you to have that internal dialogue. What you don't want to think or wonder is, what if I had done this? What would have happened? What if I hadn't believed what I'd read, what my friend told me, what my mother told me, what my spouse said about me? What if I had said, thank you for the feedback, but I think I'm going to try it my way? What might have happened? What might have been different? What if I had stepped up and said, this is who I am, and I'm going for it. And if I fall flat on my backside, I'll get myself back up again, and I'll get on with it. What might have been different? And so that's what I want you to think about. In those moments of moving forward, that's how we reduce our powerlessness, and we start to own who we are. And in owning who we are, we can start to move forward. If you would like to continue this conversation, please come and join my Facebook group, Embrace Your Ambition, where we can have this conversation and more, and we can get into some of the detail, and you can ask me questions about what's going on for you and how you might do things differently, and what, you know, and get feedback from the rest of the group. And also, if you want to find out more about what I do, come into the Facebook group, ask questions, ask me things. And if you want to have a more deeper conversation, we can arrange that too. But I would also suggest come and join the Facebook group or come to my Facebook page. Please like it, of course. It's called Beverly Bramwell. And if you're liking what I'm writing, please like the post. And if it's resonating with you, please leave a comment, because that gives me great feedback that I'm really hitting the spot. Sometimes people message me and tell me, and I'm thinking, just write the like. But I can understand people that don't like to like, but they'll message me and tell me that. And so that's my feedback. And so I would ask that you feedback that way, feedback via the group, but come over to Facebook. I think most people are on Facebook. If you're not on that, I'm on LinkedIn. Again, my name is Beverly Bramwell. I don't post quite so regularly on there, but I do post, and you can message me and contact me and ask me stuff there too. Because my point is, it all begins with a single step. So the quicker we start taking those steps, the quicker it is for us to become unstuck, to own who we are, and to start moving forward. And I believe that it's important for us all to own who we are, to not apologize, to not deny ourselves. As Marianne Williamson says, play small, lest we upset others. And if you think that might be you, then I think the first thing to do is come along to Facebook, come along to LinkedIn. Yes, I'm on Twitter too, but I think as regards a direct connection to contact me, to have a conversation with me, those are two best places to do it. But my point is, there is nothing served by you being less than yourself. And there is nothing served by you being so caught up in your thought that you can't move forward, that you feel powerless. And there is nothing to be served by knowing that you want more and not taking that step, not taking that one step to move you forward. And it's important to know that if this is your best life, if this is your only life, don't you think you deserve to give it your best shot possible? And if you have children, you are their example of what living your best life looks like. So they want, so if you want to make, give them examples, be their role model, then step up to the plate, show them who you really are, and show them it's okay for them to be who they really are. So they're not to deny themselves because of what their friends might say about them, that they are their own beings, their own selves. So if you're being your own self, they can start to say it's okay. And if people say stuff, that they know how to handle it. And actually, when people do say stuff, if you're seeing it from a different way, it's often not about you. Even when they're calling you names, it's not about you. So if your child can see that, they'll handle it quite different. And if they see their mother or their father handling it quite different, then they get it, and they can get it. And I think you can get it too. So live your best life. Go for it. And as I always keep on saying, embrace your ambition. This has been Beverly Bramwell. I'm a career transition coach. And if you're not living your best life, then you're not living at all, as far as I'm concerned. So go for it. Embrace your ambition. As I said, come find me on Facebook. My name is Beverly, B-E-V-E-R-L-E-Y, Bramwell, B-R-A-M-W-E-L-L. I'm on Facebook, and my Facebook group is called Embrace Your Ambition, just like this radio show. Thank you, and goodbye.
At Carl's Jr., we're pioneers of the great American burger. We're about quality, value, and taking a stand for your hard-earned dollar. That's why we made the $2.49 jalapeno double cheeseburger. It's the best burger for the price you ever had, with two charbroiled beef patties, jalapenos, and pepper jack cheese. Because if you don't stand for something, that means you're sitting. And that's just lazy. The $2.49 jalapeno double cheeseburger, the best $2.49 burger you ever had. Only at Carl's Jr. Price and participation may vary. Tax not included for a limited time. Crazy, Jack's gonna crash your crate. Jackbox crashes hunger.
Try my jumbo breakfast platter with scrambled eggs, 8 mini pancakes, hash brown, and bacon or sausage for just $2.99.
$2.99? Shut the front door.
Of the van or... Only at Jack in the Box. Limited time only at participating restaurants.